Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show with Aaron, and on the line I've got Kane Titchener. Morning, Kane.
Morning, Aaron.
You're going to be in Raglan tomorrow night, Wednesday night. I understand, speaking at the Stuart Street Church Hall at 6:30.
That's right.
And yep. Talking about, what's the name of the talk? I've lost my piece of paper here with the name on it.
It's Fluoride is the New Lead. It's basically a discussion around the neurotoxicity of fluoride and the latest science that's been emerging in the last couple of years, in particular the report that's come out in the last couple of weeks.
Okay. We'll get to that in a moment. I guess this has been triggered out here by the message from the district council that they are planning to start fluoridating the Raglan water supply.
Well, the situation is that the Director General of Health now has decision-making control over the fluoridation.
Yeah.
So that person can direct the control of the fluoridation in each area. And essentially what the situation is that there's 14 council areas in the country that are currently being directed to fluoridate, and we're thinking Raglan could definitely be next on the list.
It has turned up. Someone did find some stuff in one of the council documents alluding to that. I'm not sure how. I don't think there's a timeline associated with it or anything like
right.
that. But, I don't know where that is right now. I'd have to get someone to look that up. But
It's imminent, I think.
Yeah, the minutes of, but which subcommittee and all that sort of thing.
Mm.
Yeah. So what's your basic message, just to start off with?
So essentially what we're saying is fluoride is the new lead. So there's a number of similarities between lead and fluoride now, and it might be quite astonishing for people to hear that.
Yeah.
But the reality is there's been emerging science of neurotoxicity coming out of Canada and Mexico, funded by the NIH, which is the National Institutes of Health in America, that has been studying this research. And essentially, the situation is that the NCP report has been published based on that research. I can give you a rundown of that science, if you like.
Yeah, no, let's get into that. What is it saying? Is there new stuff in it that's kind of a bit revelatory?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's definitely bringing it all to light. So just first of all, the NCP is an interagency organisation of the highest health and science organisations in the United States, including the CDC, the FDA, and the NIEHS, which is the National Institutes of Environmental Health Sciences. So this is a high-powered a group and organisation that's pulled this report together. They've taken 6 years, and essentially the summary is that they've got 55 human IQ studies, 52 of which show a lowering of IQ.
That's okay.
95% consistency, and it shows a 7-point IQ reduction.
And that's for who?
That is for everyone in the population, so that's across the population. But that includes both high and low levels of fluoride. So what they've done is they've looked at what the high-quality studies are, high quality in terms of creation, data, and how it's been conducted.
Yeah.
And what they've done is they found 19 of those studies, and 18 of those studies show a lowering of IQ. And what they've done is they've done a meta-analysis on what the situation is with fluoride in the water, and they found no safe threshold. And with the best science, which is the Canadian and Mexico studies, the American element data, they have found a lowering IQ of 5 IQ points at 1 part per million.
So I should have asked is kind of over what time period, how long do you need to be drinking this water for this effect to happen?
So the studies and the effect is happening basically with a pregnant mother and up to sort of the infancy stage.
Okay, right. So it's the early development phase that you're talking about. Okay.
Correct, yes.
Okay, so what else is it talking about?
So basically, what it's saying is that that's basically the summary. So we fluoridate in New Zealand between 0.7 part per million and 1 part per million, which doesn't seem like a lot, but actually it's having a huge effect. So the effect size is on par with lead. And we've got scientists now coming out supporting the comments that it is an effect size which is sizable on par with lead. You've got sort of David Ballinger, he's written 400 neurotoxicity chemical papers. It's actually very similar to the effect size that's seen with childhood exposure to lead. So this is sort of the thing that people need to understand, that, and it's probably something they're hearing for potentially the first time, that fluoride is actually a neurotoxin.
Yeah, so are you, and I presume, like, we're going to have, a reasonably quick talk here, but you're going to have, I don't know, an hour or two to put your case on Wednesday evening, and you presumably you're going to have graphs and, you know, all that kind of stuff with you, a bit more detail?
Yeah, so what I'm going to be doing is going into a little bit more detail on the studies that are used, for the, so the Element and Merrick studies, the Canadian-Mexico studies, so the supporting information. So for anyone interested, it's BASH-ISH 2017, Green 2021, TILTIP 2020, these studies that are the most powerful, that talk about what is actually happening and the results. And so that, and then that, those studies, as I said, there's 52 or 55 show a lowering of IQ. So that's what I'll be sharing on Wednesday evening.
Okay, and is that the principal problem? Are there other problems? Most chemicals have multiple effects on the body.
They do. And there's just a recent study out, Dewey 2023, which covers off and talks about the increase in ADD and ADHD. And that follows on from Riddell 2021. So this research is just flooding out. So that's a neurotoxicity element as well. And people might identify that a bit more readily with, you know, unsettled children and these sorts of things. So,
yeah.
But there are other things as well, such as dental fluorosis and an increase in hip fractures and lowered thyroid function. So, you know, there is this science that is there that people need to be aware of as well.
So the implication of what you just said then is that the fluoride is getting stored in the body, is it?
That's right. So 50% of fluoride is excreted. So that's through your urine, and the remainder is going into your soft tissue and your bones. And a biomarker, so talking about lead again, lead has got Burton's line. It's the blue line that goes marked, that's on your teeth. Fluoride has got the dental fluorosis. That's the mottling of the teeth. And there's mild, medium, and severe versions of that.
And the experience, now when did you say this new research had come out of Canada?
So the Canadian study started coming out in 2017.
Okay.
And basically for the last 6 years it's just been rolling out.
So my question then is, are they acting on this in Canada?
That's a really good question. So the answer is no, they're not. They're very slow to react on this issue for whatever reason. But there is a court case that's going on in the US right now, Fluoride Action Network versus the United States EPA, and that's the next court case is the 24th of January 2024.
Yeah.
And the idea is to move this forward in terms of, you know, showing that it is actually causing harms. For whatever reason, this issue is just completely ignored by a lot of people.
Yeah. What about, we're not very good in New Zealand at looking at overseas. What are other countries overseas doing at the moment?
Yeah, good point. So 98% of Europe does not fluoridate the water supply.
98? So did you say 98%?
98% of European countries do not fluoridate the water supply.
Okay.
So this is the really interesting thing that people say, oh, everyone's doing it in the world, but no, they're not. You've got 70% of the United States, about, I think it's 7% of Australia. There are countries such as Singapore and Ireland that are the only countries that have got mandatory fluoridation. But really, it's actually a small number of countries that are fluoridating. In Europe, there's a good site on fluoridefree.org.nz, fluoridealert.org, that goes through all of the reasons why the European countries don't fluoridate their water supply. It's quite illuminating.
Can you give us some of those off the top of your head?
It's basically talking about medical ethics, human rights violations, and sort of not wanting to mass medicate. I mean, the Supreme Court in New Zealand ruled that fluoridation was essentially compulsory, so therefore it was mandatory medication.
Okay. Do they still call it medication when it's preventative? Because that's its intention, right, is to be preventative, not to treat an existing disease.
Well, they had a law change around all of this, and that information can be found at fluoridefree.org.nz. So this is the other thing that they do. They're changing the laws in terms of, if something comes in to make it a medicine, they'll change the law to say, no, it's not a medicine anymore, you know?
Okay. All right. So where do we go with this from here? Like, it's been enacted by the councils, and you're talking to local communities, but ultimately it's a national legislation issue. So what's the plan ahead?
Yeah, so I'm actually speaking to the community board at 1:30 on Wednesday, and I really appreciate any support. Any people who support stopping fluoridation can please come along. I'll be speaking for about 3 minutes, I think, and then I'll be speaking later on in the evening at 6:30 at the Congregational Church.
Congregational Church, yep.
Yeah, yeah. But the next step is we've got to get the councils to to stand up for the community. They've got to do their job and stand up for the community. So what we're doing is asking people to go to their councils with the National Toxicology Program report and give them the evidence so that they can actually move forward with stopping this. And the other exciting thing is that there's legal action that has started actually yesterday that councils can actually join to be involved with that.
So who's taken that action?
That's the New Health New Zealand.
Okay, so they're like an NGO, for want of a better
correct
phrase. Yep. Yeah, okay. Yep. Yep. Now, I remember a few years ago, Hamilton City Council decided to go away from fluoridation, and there was incredible uproar from the, what we'll call it, the establishment for, I don't know what else to describe, that how could they come up with such a wrong decision? And I was kind of curious because as I understood it, and I want to know if you were involved in this, because as I understood it, they had a lot of experts come and present to the council and they made their decision based on that. And no one, at least in the media that I saw, asked the question, what were they actually told? So first of all, were you involved with that?
Yeah, I was involved with that. Yep, so that was 2013.
Okay, that long ago. Okay.
Yeah, I've been at it for 10 years now. But so essentially what happened there was a tribunal, so both sides of the argument was heard. I think there were seven councillors who, a few dropped off because they had conflicts and things, but seven councillors decided that we should be stopping fluoridation based on the evidence that they were presented.
Yeah.
So this what happens is there's the establishment, or for want of a better word, they get their sort of media and propaganda machine working to have a referendum. Referendums are actually quite difficult to give all of the information. It's such a huge topic that people need to take the time to actually understand it.
I know a lot of money was spent by the Ministry of Health after that for publicity purposes, so
I think it was up around $40,000.
Yeah.
And Fluoride Free Hamilton, I think they raised about $13,000. But they also, the other thing they did was they just pumped it out through the DHB, you know, so that they had that big network going as well.
Yeah, it's a very strong reaction. Like, regardless of wrong or right or accuracy, it's clear that the Ministry of Health is very much determined to have this.
Yeah. It's a policy of the Ministry of Health to promote fluoridation. And a lot of people don't seem to understand that or realise the implication of it. They are not unbiased. So they are pushing fluoridation. And it'd be really interesting to know the motivations around that, because all of the evidence is there now to just stop this from happening.
Yeah. I mean, the motivation, we could speculate, but probably it's not worth doing that. So this presentation to Hamilton City Council 10 years ago, did they have experts come and talk to them? Was that how that played out?
Well, they had their top scientists from their side.
Yeah.
So, for example, Dr. Robin Wyman was there. He was a part of the National Fluoridation Information Service as a part of the DHBs. So they had their top scientists turn up and present their best evidence, and we presented our best evidence. And, you know, the councillors were convinced by us. So just so you know, there's another debate happening actually on the 27th of June in Timaru, where myself and Mary Byrne will be up against two dentists in Timaru down there. So we're finally getting to the point where we're having some debate and discussion about the topic, and that's really what's needed.
Do you get accused of not being qualified to talk about the subject? It's a normal kind of a tactic in any debate.
Yeah, we will. But at the end of the day, even top PhD people on our side also get attacked for promoting, for trying to stop fluoridation anyway. So, the evidence is the evidence, and that's what we're trying to present.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious about that. I mean, and then on the other hand, I mean, if there's dentists speaking up for fluoridation, they're not, their training is not in like toxicology and things like that anyway, so.
That's right. And what they use is the Broadbent study from 2015, and there's multiple issues with that study. And, and as an example of that, the National Toxicology Program, when they were identifying and reviewing the research, they found that the Broadbent study was actually of low quality. So there's an example of what's going on. The Ministry of Health are using the Broadbent study as well. It's just completely out of date,
And that is the one out of compared to the 19 studies
that, you mentioned. No, that wouldn't be considered high quality. I think that's one. That's one out of the 55 studies.
Oh, okay.
The 55 includes the high and the low quality.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, presumably, the fluoridation came about because there was at some stage a genuine desire to help kids' teeth. Do you know the background, like what happened way back at the start, where it all came from?
Yeah, so if you, Chris Bryson does a really good deep dive into the history of fluoridation and where it's all, you know, where it, how it all generated and things. And people need to understand it was actually about the development of the A-bomb in America, where they had a lot of fluoride in the that they needed to actually dispose of. So it sounds absolutely crazy, but it's all there that Chris Bryson's written out in the fluoride deception. So they what they've done is they've they had this fluoride to get rid of. So they did some research into fluoride and they found that it actually hardened the surface of the teeth.
Yeah.
And then they said, right, at one part per million, it's safe and effective, and that's essentially the mantra that's just carried on.
Okay. So and it does do something. It would have to have some kind of use to justify, surely, even if there's all these other problems with it.
Well, what they do is they use the 2009 Oral Health Survey, and that they say that they found a 40% tooth decay reduction, right? But when you look at the research in that report itself, it says you cannot use this study as a fluoridation study. And the other thing is you're dealing with percentages. You're not actually talking about the absolute values. The absolute improvement was about one tooth surface over 140 odd tooth surfaces in the mouth. So we're not, you know, it's just not. And the Cochrane Review, which is the sort of gold standard, came out in 2015 and said that there was essentially no modern evidence to show that there was fluoridation was resulting in tooth decay.
Or preventing tooth decay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had this experience when I was a kid. I lived in on these little atolls in the Pacific, like in Tokelau, like miles away from anywhere. And they were, because they were so isolated, they were kind of in the early phases of getting white food arriving, like, you know, white flour and things like that. And the tooth decay in the kids was insane. Like, it was really awful.
Yeah.
And they did put them on a teeth cleaning program. But my main point is that obviously there is a problem with the food that we eat in our society, and something needs to be done for our kids and us as adults too, frankly.
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, we're not saying that tooth decay is not a problem. So what we're saying is the Scotland Child Smile is a suitable answer for this situation.
So what's that?
The Scotland Child Smile is obviously from Scotland, and they've been implementing this for about 20 years. And what they do is they do healthy, they don't have fluoridation in Scotland to start. They have healthy eating in schools. They have education about that. They have toothbrushing programs in the school, and they have dental checkups that they implement. And they found that they've reduced their general anaesthetics relating to tooth decay by 50%.
Okay.
So I mean that's a huge reduction, and it's the sort of thing that, you know, we really need to be having the conversation about investing in our children with this sort of program.
I presume also there's a difference between eating fluoride and like ingesting it and simply applying it to your teeth through your toothpaste.
Yeah, that's right. So fluoride actually, if it works at all, it works on the surface of the tooth.
Yeah.
So that came out from the CDC in 1999 that the principal benefit of fluoride is topical. So that's right. If we brush it on our teeth and then spit it out, that's reducing our risk from ingesting it.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing about the fluoride argument, that we need to be teaching people that, hey, look, it works on the surface of the tooth. So and going back to Hamilton, Robin Wyman suggested that what was happening was we were drinking the water was going through into our soft tissue, coming into our bloodstream, and then being excreted back into our mouth through our salivary glands. That was at a level of 0.003 parts per million.
Right? So not much of it was getting through, is what you're saying?
Not much was getting, but he was saying that was providing a benefit. But at the same time, he was saying that children need to be using 1,000 parts per million fluoride on their toothpaste. I mean, this is a sort of basically lunacy that is being given to us, and, you know, people are not digging deep enough to understand these things, you know.
So it's quite hard to actually measure the effect of people are using fluoride in the toothpaste, you know, the population is using fluoride in the toothpaste at the same time.
Yeah, so you need specific studies to work through exactly, you know, what you would be doing. So whether people are having fluoridated water or not, and then having fluoride toothpaste or not, and then other ingesting of, say, drinking tea. Tea's high in fluoride, as an example. So, you know, all these things need to be measured and calculated sort of correctly in terms of the design of any sort of study. And this is going back to the neurotoxicity. This is what the high quality studies did, was they looked at that detail in terms of the design of the study. So there's a lot of tooth decay studies that wouldn't stand up to the rigour of, you know, that sort of design and be called high quality. Mm. It's quite shocking, you know.
All right, so given that it could be a long battle, do you have advice for people about, like, that's the question. Can you get the fluoride out of the water? If you've got town supply at your house and you've got fluoride in the water and you want to get it out, is that possible?
Yeah, so you can use what's called a reverse osmosis filter. So other filters such as carbon filters and other sort of, you know, filters are not going to do the job. You need a reverse osmosis filter.
Okay.
What that does, though, is that takes out, you know, all of the chemicals and minerals, right? So you've got to be careful about putting, you know, those beneficial minerals back into your body. But, you know, it does take out the fluoride, yeah. So I just want to also, if I can, Aaron, just explain where the fluoride comes from.
Yeah, because I will be having to wrap up in a minute for the news. So, give us your essential stuff, yeah.
Yeah, cool. So basically, fluoride that goes into the water supply is from the phosphate fertilizer industry. What happens is you've got phosphate rock, which is rich in fluoride, about 4%. Now, to remove that fluoride, sulfuric acid is added to the rock, and what happens is two toxic gases are given off, hydrogen fluoride and silicon tetrafluoride. These two gases are too toxic to go into the environment. They need to be captured by what's called the wet scrubber chimneys, where droplets of water capture the gas. The solution at the bottom is called hydrofluorosilicic acid. Excess silica is removed from that, and that is what is going directly into people's public water supply in New Zealand.
Right, okay. There you go, people. That's how it works.
Yep.
Now, so folks, we'll be talking to Kane Titchener. He's going to be talking at both at the community board meeting at 1:30 on Wednesday, but also at the, is it 1:30?
Yes.
I should know the time. I go to every meeting.
Yeah, 1:30, yep.
Yeah, but also 6:30 at the Stuart Street Church Hall. And you'll be doing a Q&A afterwards if people want to ask you some questions.
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, look, Kane, thank you for talking to us this morning, and enjoy your time in Raglan, I guess.
Thank you very much, Aaron. Appreciate it.
Okay, see ya. All right, folks, yes, that was Kane Titchener from Te Awamutu, he said at the start. And if you want to know more, his organisation is involved with fluoridefree.org.nz. And you want to ask him the questions, then you can do so. Yeah, Wednesday evening. We're going to hit the news now, and John should be in the studio after the news and weather and all that, and we'll be talking local politics more, because, of course, we've got the community board meeting tomorrow, as we said, so a little bit about that as well.